This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com in the sunny and very, very frigid climes of Western Japan.
This is James Evan Pilato in the People's Republic of Portland, Oregon, and I run MediaMonarchy.com, and we both welcome you to the 101st episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com, and we want to give just a huge welcome and a thanks to everyone who made last week's episode, I think, one of our most watched episodes ever. So if we've gained and hopefully held on to new audience, arms wide open, we are nonpartisan here, big tent approach. We essentially want to look at all the open source intelligence and better inform all of ourselves to be able to make better decisions. James, without further ado, when I'm on break, and I've mentioned this before at work, I look at the mainstream newspapers. I look at the Oregonian and I look at the New York Times to kind of get a large, you know, kind of overview of maybe what's going on, what are they selling in the mainstream media. So in one day of the two newspapers, I saw quite the theme of drones for peace, if you will, and we'll take it from the top at newsobserver.com. FAA delays new rules for operating small drones in U.S. airspace. New rules for operating small drones in U.S. airspace have been delayed by the Federal Aviation Administration, which has been weighing for years how to regulate these unmanned aircraft over populated areas. Currently, drones are not allowed to fly in the U.S. except with special permission from the FAA, but as demand increases for using drones in the commercial world, the agency plans to propose new regulations on small, remotely piloted aircraft, a move seen as the first step towards opening the nation's skyways to drone aircraft. The FAA had said it planned to issue its proposal by this month, meaning January 31st. It's now February 1st as I speak to you here in the States. Now, the agency says the earliest that the proposed rules will be published is this spring. The FAA did not say why it was being postponed. Not everyone has waited for authorization to use drones. James, the article goes on, but I think we can pretty much fill in exactly where they're going, and I'll hand it to you before I run down the other kind of related stories.
Well, it's important to understand that this story is talking about the commercial use of drones. So, mm-hmm. as you say, that article goes on to talk about like real estate agencies in California that are using drones to take pictures of properties and things like that. So, as this technology starts to filter down from the military level, where it almost always inevitably begins, including with the internet and all of these other things that are developed by military agencies and then handed down to the public, now we see the drones starting to filter down to the commercial level and now becoming an airspace management problem for the FAA or whatever. Other agencies want to get their fingers in this pie, so it becomes a regulatory thing. But I think it's important to understand how this technology is starting to filter down and is becoming, I think, part of a new part of the dialectic, the unfolding dialectic of how we get sucked into using these technologies that ultimately are going to be our destruction if we allow them to continue growing unfettered. And I'll just point people in the direction of a video that came out, I believe, just yesterday or 2 days ago about some quad rotors, and you can actually watch that video of these little robotic helicopter-like devices that are being built that can do all these pre-programmed formations and things. And I'm glad to see from the comments on that video that I'm not the only one who starts to see how really creepy this technology gets very quickly, because of course it's wonderful, it's great, we could use this technology for so many great things like so many other technologies, but like so many other technologies, it's hard not to imagine these being used for military purposes and being put in the hands of a military that is increasingly and admittedly starting to go towards unmanned aerial vehicles and unmanned attack robots and all of this other sci-fi nightmare type of stuff in the name of cutting the budget for the Pentagon, which was the plan all along. And so I see this commercialization of the drone technology as a way of bringing it to the people and introducing them to it and getting them to invest their selves and their identity with this technology so that it becomes a part of our world. And it's just not hard to go from here to some sort of sci-fi nightmare. And I think that's all I'll say about it at this point.
Well, and we covered some drone stories a couple of months ago, and we'll include the flashback to that, the drone detention story here on New World Next Week. And James, I have not seen the quadcopter video, but I can't help but be reminded of a video I saw a couple of years ago. I think it was Boston Dynamics created this robot. I think it was called Big Dog. And it looked so lifelike. It looked almost like, you know, two people covered up in an outfit that they were just using. It looked like human legs. And again, it was frightening. The other things in the newspaper I saw that same day, that kind of put the story together for me. Just as you were saying, this is becoming part of the dialectic. Same day, all in the newspapers, civilian deaths due to drones are few, Obama says, and the update from this Google YouTube town hall that the Obama side did last night, I believe he started to talk about drones, and I think they basically cut him off. It was like, dude, you're talking about, you know, national security kind of stuff. But the New York Times ended that paper on the 31st with an op-ed called Drones for Human Rights, putting forth the idea of, if we can use drones to, you know, sort of surveil and kill people all around the world, couldn't we use it also to look for, you know, human rights violations? And again, James, that's kind of how it all starts. What if we put tracking microchips in Alzheimer's patients? Well, who could be against that idea? And that's the slippery slope.
That's it. Skynet cometh, and if the people welcome it with open arms, then it just makes it all that much easier for them.
Mm-hmm. So our second story, James, we will turn to the always indispensable ZeroHedge.com. This is Europe's scariest chart. Surging Greek and Portuguese bond yields? Plunging Italian bank stocks? The projected GDP of the Eurozone? In the grand scheme of things, while certainly disturbing, none of these data points actually tell us much about the secular shift within European society, and certainly nothing that couldn't be fixed if you, you know, of course, just wanted to print off more fiat units to dilute the capital base even further. No, the one chart that truly captures the latent fear behind the scenes in Europe is that showing youth unemployment in the continent's troubled countries and, frankly, everywhere else, because the last thing Europe needs is a discontented, disenfranchised, and devoid of hope youth roving the streets with nothing to do, easily susceptible to extremist and xenophobic tendencies. After all, it must be someone's fault that there are no job opportunities for anyone. So the chart presented shows the youth, that is 16 to 24-year-old unemployment in three select European countries with the greater Eurozone as a reference point. You may be surprised to see that Portugal and Greece are quite bad, but it is Spain where the youth unemployment pain is most acute at 51.4%. More than half of the youth eligible for work does not have a job. So the real question is, if there's no hope for tomorrow, what's the opportunity cost of doing something stupid and quite irrational today? In a related note, the impending undeclared default of five major U.S. banks. Coming soon. James?
Well, scariest chart. It certainly is a scary chart, and let's go through why that is, because I think it's self-evident that the entire European meltdown and all of this that we see coming out of this is an absolutely perfectly predictable result of all of the steps that have been taken to get us to this point and have been perpetrated by Goldman Sachs and others in Greece and all of the cronies that were in positions of power in the various European states that now is being centralized. I think we've gone over this in many previous episodes and of my podcast, your podcast, of this New World Next Week. All of this, we've talked about it before. And the point is that the perfectly predictable result of all this is the skyrocketing youth unemployment. And youth unemployment is probably the most concerning of all of these figures and stats, because this is the core basis for a revolutionary fervor-led inspired movement. And it's important to once again stress that dictatorships and absolute tyrannies always come to the back on the wave of popular mass support. Mussolini marched into Rome as a conquering hero. So we have to understand that people always look to this, to some great man to come along with some great movement that people can invest their identity in, and then they can go after anyone who's not for that movement, and they can make it about that sort of coming together and giving them purpose in life when there's not really nothing else, because everyone else is unemployed and they have nothing to do, and it creates that revolutionary fervor. This is, I think, an absolute perfectly predictable result of what's happened, and that's why I think this is what is being engineered to happen. And we know it's always after great economic collapses and catastrophes that these galvanizing political leaders tend to come together. And in the case of Mussolini and Hitler and all of the others, they always turn out to have been funded directly by MI6 or to have been on the payroll of various agencies. Charles Taylor in Liberia was CIA. All of this, it happens over and over again. So we have to be aware of this and prepared for this. And once again, it's a question of the only way to win the game is not to play, not to get involved in their economic system, which they're going to convince you is the only game to play. It's about building up your local community and not looking for some national leader to come along and galvanize everyone's opinion.
don't play no game that I can't win. And we can relate that, yeah, to the money game or to the emotional con game of our presidential selections here in the States. But James, for our third and final story this week, that's when the drugs kicked in, and we take it from StratRisks.com, and it comes from the old gray lady. And the question being asked, are we ready for a morality pill? Why are some people prepared to risk their lives to help a stranger when others won't even stop to dial an emergency number? Scientists have been exploring questions like this for decades. In the 60s and 70s, famous experiments by Stanley Milgram and Philip Zimbardo suggested that most of us would, under specific circumstances, voluntarily do great harm to innocent people. More recent research has told us a lot about what happens in the brain when people make moral decisions. But are we getting any closer to understanding what drives our moral behavior? If continuing brain research does in fact show biochemical differences between the brains of those who help others and the brains of those who do not, could this lead to a morality pill, a drug that makes us more likely to help? Given the many other studies linking biochemical conditions to mood and behavior and the proliferation of drugs to modify them that have followed, the idea is not far-fetched. If so, would people choose to take it? Could criminals be given the option as an alternative to prison of a drug-releasing implant that would make them less likely to harm others? Might governments begin screening people to discover that those most likely to commit crimes? Those who are at much greater risk of committing crime might be offered the morality pill. If they refuse, they might be required to wear a tracking device that would show where they had been at any given time so that they would know that if they did commit a crime, they would be detected. This is another great piece from the opinion column in the New York Times, James. And when I looked at the bottom and I saw who it was written by, I was like, ah, Peter Singer. God, that name sounds really familiar. James, why does it?
Well, I'm so glad that you did dig that up, because I must admit I just glanced over it. I didn't think to check into it. But when I did check into Peter Singer, oh yes, he's a famous bioethicist who's written about all sorts of wonderful things, like how loving relationships between men and animals should be allowed, and other things like this. Because bioethics is all about eugenics, and it's just eugenics by another name, and it's another way to steer us into all sorts of bizarre social experimentation that the sick and twisted elite at the top want to engineer our society into. Again, all part of the same engineered collapse. It's economic, it's societal, it's moral, it's all of this. And the real question here is, who gets to decide what is the neutral setting for our morality, and how do they decide that? And this is the type of information that again, just think of the military uses. Once again, the military, the Pentagon, has been talking for decades about how they want to use drugs to create super soldiers. Well, what if they can use drugs to create perfect killing machines who have absolutely no remorse or compassion, basically making them like the elite themselves, the elite. Anyway, as you say, I really hope people will take a look at Peter Singer and his background and some of the incredibly bizarre and just out of this world stuff that he's written about in the past.
Well, and I know people, James, people sometimes complain to you and I on our use of terms like the elites and eugenics, where they say, you know, they're not really elites and it's really dysgenics. And all these things are essentially true, but we're not here to kind of get into these semantic discussions here and now. Ultimately, we want you guys to do all the research on your own. We just hopefully lay out the path for you. But if there was a morality pill, James, and again, this is what I find so fascinating, and that's why, the passion that makes me do Media Monarchy is when you see these themes and memes. So today in the news, we'll add the link, Pfizer recalls 1 million birth control packs after mix-up. So we see the scientific dictatorship is well enforced, James. Before we run out of time, we want to quickly mention that we will not be here with the New World next week, but we will be on tomorrow to discuss food world order issues, right, James?
That's right. We'll be on Corbett Report Radio. Details on that can be found corbettreport.com/radio. You can listen live. You can phone in. And yes, I will not be here next week, so there will be no New World next week. And James, you'll be filling in on Corbett Report Radio next Thursday, so thank you for that.
Thank you. Thanks for, giving me that whole opportunity. So this has been episode 101 of NewWorldNextWeek.com. And again, a huge thanks to everybody. James, appreciate it.
Take care.